had any breakfast?
I did have a little bit of breakfast, yeah.
Did you? What time did you get up at?
I haven't been sleeping much for the 3 days, so...
Oh, I'm definitely saving this. I'm not going down this avenue.
Well, no, it's probably too X-rated for... I've been staying at someone's house, so I've been cleaning it this morning.
Right.
But I just freaked out at like 4 a.m. thought I should start now. Yeah, so I just
one
started
of those
cleaning.
Sort of anxious early morning rises.
Yeah, but hey, that's all good. Hi, I'm Ollie from Yak, and you're listening to Q Presents The Making Of.
I'm going to read a little bit out about you first.
Oh, yeah.
So you just remain...
All lies.
You remain calm and silent. Hello, listener, and welcome to the latest instalment of Q Presents The Making Of, the podcast that goes deep into the lives of the great music makers of our time. My name is Niall Doherty, and our guest this week is Ollie Burslem. Ollie is the singer, guitarist, and chief songwriter in the London-based trio Yak, one of the most exciting guitar bands to emerge over the past decade. Yak released their debut album, Atlas Salvation, in 2016, following it up earlier this year with Pursuit of Momentary Happiness, a record that put a more soulful twist on their ferocious garage rock sound. They recently completed work on a new EP titled Atlas Complex that will come out in early November. Ollie joins us in our Camden studio on a bright September morning. Hello, Ollie. Are you a morning person?
Yeah, can be, yeah.
Yeah, is your phone off? You're checking your
it's
phone
off,
there.
It's off,
you just had a last-minute panic, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
Are you usually a morning person, or are you just a not-sleeping person?
When we're on tour, I went through a stage of sleeping all through the day and staying up all night, just because I'm a bit of... It's quite nice if you're in a van for 8 hours a day just to sleep that through. It's a bit like time travel in a kind of weird way. But I try not to do that now.
What do you do now? What's your tour routine now? Does that vampiric existence not lead to a healthy lifestyle?
Well, no, it does. I mean, I enjoy it. But I don't really have any kind of routines, really. Some days I don't go to sleep and some days I'll sleep all day, so...
Is that from being in a band or is that just the way
Well, maybe, yeah. And I do like going out... Or, you know, get into writing songs or doing something. I like, nighttime's quite good. It's quite nice when everyone's asleep. It's kind of, doesn't feel like you're missing anything, so.
Well, so you know, some artists get to that stage where they start writing between the sort of, they have like a 9-to-5 structure.
Yeah.
Are you the opposite of that? Are you an nocturnal creature?
Yeah, I don't do that. Like I said, I don't have any routine particularly, but having no routine, I suppose.
And what are you doing straight after this? Are you off on tour?
I think we travel to Cologne tonight. We'll stay there for the evening and then travel on to Hamburg to the Reeper Balm Festival. I like Hamburg a lot.
Good. That's a messy city, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that what appeals to you?
No, yeah, it's great. Last time we ended up in all sorts of situations in supercars with a lady who said she's sewn her own face on. which I didn't think I'd believed, but then I didn't believe she had a supercar. Or she said, if you say my name at any hotel, you'll get a penthouse suite. And I was like, I don't think this is true. And then we ended up going out of the club, and she's like, doop doop, and it's like this Lamborghini, and then drove to this hotel, and she said her name, and they gave her a penthouse suite. So there we go.
Oh, so what was the end of the story?
The end of the story was I think I woke up, and there was some kind of weird movie on. And she said, I'm going to drive to your next gig in Amsterdam. I was like, okay, well, we've got to leave now. And then got to the next day at the gig and she'd rocked up in a sports car again.
Really?
She's a nice lady now, yeah.
Do you find that characters are attracted to you?
It's one of my favourite things, meeting new people. I think that's the most amazing thing about touring. Turns out we're all kind of quite similar. And there's some interesting people around. I suppose always been attracted to the kind of people on the fringes or people who don't have a normal existence, I suppose. And with playing live music, you do get to meet some characters. Yeah.
What's your favourite city to play in?
I don't know, it's a hard one. I mean, London's always great, but I always get more nervous in London just because there's quite a lot of people here. Or you forget that someone's coming and to put them on the guest list or something like that. But Paris has always been quite good. And also just visiting new places and being quite surprised that people... We played Moscow a couple of months ago.
Okay, how was that?
That was great, yeah. I really enjoyed it.
What's your, when you're packing to go on tour, what's your must-have essentials?
Well, I kind of live out of my car still.
Still?
Yeah.
So, we'll get to the car story.
So
we might, or should we just do the car story now?
I mean, there's not much of a story except for...
You live out of your car.
Well, I live out of it, yeah. So today I was packing some bits out of the boot on the way here, actually, yeah.
So how long has
I don't really
the car been
well,
your sort of storage slash living facility?
Probably 3 years now, yeah. So, but it's been quite... I mean, it's so exciting to do... For instance, I met a friend in a pub and I said, well, we're playing Green Man at the weekend. Let's go see Stereolab. We're playing the night before. I said, we'll go in the car. She was like, really? I said, yeah, it's quite nice. Park up on the field. Then we drove into the Brecon Beacons and travelled around Snowdonia, hiking around. I always go walking on my own in Wales, which I'm allowed to do because I've got, you know, if I'm in London, I've got a week, I'll travel up there. And
yeah.
Went walked to a place called Clad yr Idris, which is the shoulders of giants, I think. It's in Welsh. Apparently, if you sleep there at night time, you wake up insane or a poet, they say.
Right, have you slept up there at night time?
Well, I'm not too sure. But so you get to do nice things when you know, kind of nomadic lifestyle. And I suppose I didn't start this band until I was in my late 20s, so I had a lot of time sat in offices and working that kind of lifestyle. So it's, you know, feels quite a privilege to be able to do this. Or buying, selling furniture before the band as well. So that was quite similar, travelling around the country and packing the van full of stuff. And
yeah, we're going to get to all of that.
Okay, yeah.
Is the car tidy?
No. It smells like a sock as well.
Just one big sock.
One big sock.
Like the opposite of that new car smell.
Yeah, it's kind of... I was trying to figure it out the other day. My friend Errol ended up in Wales trying to figure out what the smell was, but never found it. But it's gone now.
Dead mouse?
Yeah, I don't know. Not too sure. But it's left us, so that's fine.
And then tell me, what are Yak up to at the moment? You've just completed work on this new EP.
Yes, and that's happened. We went to Nashville and started the EP there at Jack White's Gaff. Third Man Records. So that was great, just being let loose there. And
yeah, what was it like there?
Yeah, it was great. There's some hot chicken and they were nice people. We only had 3 days there, so it was just, we just got down to it really, and they were kind enough to let us use all their gear. So we had some of the White Stripe stuff and the Raconteur stuff all in like a little kind of room, so
cool.
It was nice to go through all the gear and try and make some new music. Yeah. And they were just so, they were all sweet to us, so, yeah, hats off.
Does an EP feel like a good thing to do, like a fresh start between records? Why do an EP now?
I think so much effort goes into the cycle, that horrible word, or campaign, all these rubbish words that record labels use. But I suppose it's like an archaic form that there's still, you know, you get stuck in this cycle, I suppose. So it's nice to be able to break out of it and do something that, you know, maybe kind of have a rough idea for the next record. So try out some new things. I think it's quite good. And then when we come back to London, our friend Laurie has a studio in South London in this kind of this dormer bungalow with Bakelite handles and parquet flooring and a lovely old Neve desk. And we actually recorded some of the songs there as well. So, and that only, was that a month ago? Yeah, so it's all happened quite quick.
It feels like a break from your sound. The first track could be Yak's Bond theme.
Yes.
Am I a Good Man? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
That could be like your Bond theme.
Yeah. It's a bit kind of soul-y. I did, when I finished the vocal, Laurie, who did the vocal in South London, I was like, Jesus, I don't think you could drink 5 pints, smoke a pack of fags and sing it because it's quite high pitch. I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do that one. I might have to try and start behaving myself a bit better, but yeah.
Have you ever done a sober show?
Yeah.
You're not one of those that needs to get in the...
No. When we first started, there seemed to be kind of a lot of energy towards that thing, kind of going for it and stuff. I think it was just more through insecurity more than anything. And kind of just feeling like, God, you know, live it quite hard. But we kind of chilled out a bit more now. Oh, no, drummer Elliot says, I keep saying, oh, we're much more, we better behave now. And he's like, are we? But I think we are.
Those early shows in London seemed to really capture people's imagination. I mean, there was a lot of, before you'd only released a few things before the debut album, there was a lot of people talking about Yak as a live band. Did it feel like a really exciting time?
Not really. Me and Andy started, he's not in the band anymore, played bass, and we've been friends since we were like four, been good mates. So we just did it because we had a space for the first time in London that we didn't have to pay for. And we just started just playing with other musicians, and Elliot being one of them who's in the band now playing drums. And then was like, I think I went to the corner shop and my friend said, do you want a gig? I was like, ah, okay. Next weekend, okay. Just went in for some bacon and egg and came out with a gig. So then we met Phil, our sound engineer, who's still with us now. And he said, do you want to record? I was like, well, I never really thought about that, but yeah, we could do it. And someone said, do you want to release it? And it kind of went on from there, really. So there was no kind of pressure. It was just, I thought we had been on the sidelines for so long. I think when we had the opportunity finally to get out there and play gigs, we wanted to make the most of it, really, and play every gig with the intensity like it was our last, I suppose, which is still the same now. The first record was our last record, and the second album was going to be our last record, and this EP is our last record. It's always has that intensity, I suppose.
And then, so tell me, you and Andy met when you, do you say you were four?
Something like that, four or five, yeah.
What were you like as a kid? That was in, is that in the West Midlands?
Yeah, just outside Wolverhampton. I don't know, just kind of, not so sure.
When did you first get into music? Were you odd?
I don't know. That's not for me to say, is it? into music a lot, really. I'm not particularly an academic, so that seemed to be the thing that seemed to be belonged to me, I suppose. Had this relationship with music from an early age, yeah.
When did you start playing guitar?
Well, I posed with it for the first 27 years. No, I posed with it for a bit. I kind of liked Elvis and stuff, and loads of old 50s music, all that kind of Fats Domino and stuff, weirdly, and the Shaggy. My sister said to me recently, when she left for university, she was afraid I was going to get bullied at secondary school, so got me some kind of modern 90s house music to listen to. Left me some CDs, which I can't remember, but...
I'll take
your word for it. But yeah, I've always been just obsessed with it, really.
What were you like in secondary school?
A nuisance, probably.
You well-behaved or badly behaved?
A nuisance. Not particularly really naughty, but yeah, pretty... I wasn't allowed back. I actually got banned from music as well, which is quite the irony. But
How did that happen?
I can't remember.
Too much of a racket.
Yeah, I think maybe there was a scene where we broke in at lunchtime and connected all the amplifiers up and locked all the doors or something like this, kind of, or hit the steel pans too hard or something like this. I can't quite remember.
Were you in a band in school?
Yeah, with Andy actually, who's in the band, yeah.
What were they like? What were they called?
Awful. Oh, God, there's loads of terrible names, none of which I could repeat on air, to be honest. it's always good. And there was lots of music around the Midlands as well. And my brother played, and so I used to see him a lot. So it just did seem to be something that was around and was fun as well, really. And the kind of the characters that would be at the pubs or, you know, the old boys in their 60s and... I just remember seeing it as a kid, just being quite enthralled about these kind of naughty men. I remember once there was a bass player playing and his wife came storming into the pub and poured a pint over his head and then gave him the dog, and he never missed he's playing whatever song he's dum 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 or whatever he was playing. I was thinking, wow, that's incredible.
That scene really had an effect on you.
Yeah, it really did, yeah. Q presents The Making Of.
What bands did you love at that point?
Well, I just like all sorts of music. I suppose that was all kind of like bluesy stuff at the pubs. Brother was probably into his grunge more because that was his. He was older than me. And then MTV2 was that. So we didn't have MTV, but I remember going around to a friend's house and just being staring at that. It was all like terrible, like Papa Roach and Linkin Park.
Sort of like early noughties.
I remember seeing every gig. I was going to see a lot of gigs in Birmingham and Wolverhampton, that was close. So there used to be a club in Birmingham called Cold Rise, and a lot of Detroit bands came over. Obviously, White Stripes was the one that really took off. So I remember seeing them. Ben Swank, who actually runs Third Man now, is one of Jack's old friends. He was in a band called Soul Dad Brothers.
Yeah.
So Dirt Bomb. So there was that. Yeah, but I'd see anything that came through, really. Yeah.
And at that point, in terms of being a punter, were you also thinking, I want to be in a band? Was that a dream, or was that...
Well, always in Wolverhampton when I was there. That was always the first thing. But then always, I kind of grew up a bit outside of Wolverhampton in kind of in the countryside, in the middle of nowhere, really. So when I came to London when I was 17, and then that was, I didn't really leave. And there was a nightclub called Trash here, which
yeah,
a lot of electro music. And I remember going there, and then the whole focus probably came just towards just being able to stay in London, really, and pay my way so I could stay here to experience all these great things that big cities have to offer, I suppose. So that made the music probably a bit harder and put on that on the back burner. I mean, how many drummers have got a drum kit in London?
Yeah. Who wants to be a drummer in London?
Yeah.
What prompted the move to London? So you were 17 and you just up sticks.
Yeah, I just remember being at my friend's, all the bombs were going off and we'd stayed up all night. And he's like, should we still go down? It's like, yeah, let's go down. So then just came down in the middle of all that, all that kind of stuff that was happening here and going to clubs. And
so that's what, 2006, is it?
Maybe, yeah. Or maybe before now even. I can't remember. But yeah, so there was all that and trying to get into nightclubs and being mischievous and seeing lots of stuff. Like I said, I was kind of from the middle of nowhere, so it was nice to, yeah. Nice.
Did you make lots of friends?
Yeah, made quite a few. Not many music friends, really.
And so what was funding your living at that point?
So I worked at all sorts. I was a handyman for a bit. I worked at bars, nightclubs, Mayfair nightclubs, Peter Stringfellow's strip club. Worked in an office once. Worked in recruitment.
It's hard to imagine you in an office.
Free spirited. Used to call me Olive, actually. Yeah, that was my name, Olive. I remember it was all the bankers' crisis, and I was just on the phones, but going to the local pub, and everyone was, music people.
So it was in the city.
Yeah. And I used to try and make some kind of ad hoc suit, and then go to the pub afterwards, and had people dressed, going to gigs, you're a banker. Or whatever, not that it was, but I remember just being, it's quite nice being on both sides of the fence, really. And I suppose that's another thing, the band, I think we've always enjoyed contrast and maybe being able to sit in a pub in Wolverhampton, talk to people with completely different ideas to the liberal left, as they say, in Hackney, or, to try and have as much contrast. And I think the more contrast there's been in my existence, the more it's made me more confident about what I believe in, I think, to a certain degree.
Was there anything you enjoyed about working in the city?
I mean, lovely people and, a lot of proper Londoners coming from Essex and worked with some nice ladies, yeah. Everyone was sound, yeah.
And then
everyone's usually all right.
How long did you work there for?
I can't remember. 2 years, a year and a half.
And then what came after that?
And then the furniture, yeah. Just got into that. Started doing Spitalfields Market and hustling around, buying, selling stuff.
How long did you have your stall for? Where did that come from? Did you have like a passion for antiques?
Yeah. Always had a passion and managed to find some stuff along the way, which I sold. I think I sold something at Christie's when I was about 20 or something. And then that kind of fueled it, really. And then I met lots of great people through doing it. John Coxon, who's had a lot of, helped us with a lot of these records and became a good friend. I sold his dining room table to him.
And that's how you met?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Spiritualized and stuff. So that kind of and informed me on music and helped a lot personally. Yeah, he's a good man.
Did you have some other famous customers as well, didn't you? I read somewhere that you'd Thurston Moore.
So I think when we first started playing the band, everyone was name checking anyone that walked past the stall. Yeah, and there was a few people. But I suppose there is in East London, there's a few people who play music.
I mean, so at that point, are you thinking, well, I'm going to be a successful antiques guy rather than a guy in a band?
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, that was the aim.
So what happened?
Well, I sat in a shop one day and I thought, well, if I don't do it again and give it another go, then I think it'd be I'd probably regret it. So, and now we've done it, so I'm done now. I'm going to go back to my furniture. So maybe that's the thing for next year, really. And I'm just so proud of everything we've achieved. It's been great, really.
I mean, what is there that you want to do that you haven't done yet?
What, in life? Or
yeah, just in terms of what's next.
Well, it'd be nice to live somewhere. And it'd be nice to have some money. So maybe do that. But, yeah, I don't know. Not so sure. I'd like to live in another country. I'd like to go travelling. Yeah, there's quite a lot of stuff, really.
So tell me about filling that gap between the Antique Stool and then Yak making their debut album. What happened?
Well, I ended
Was it an exciting time?
Yeah, I ended up in like a squat, and there was a shop, and then a friend had the squat, and then we started the shop like for a little while. And in the basement of the shop, there was room, and I had loads of friends in bands. And I said, oh, can we leave our amp? Can I leave a drum kit? So people just started leaving stuff down there, and I slowly started, shutting the shop earlier and going downstairs. And for the first time ever in London or in my adult life, being able to have time just to create and make music, really, without the pressures of having a 9-to-5 and stuff. So yeah, it was just quite exciting. I thought, well, let's give this a go for a while.
Can you remember the first Yak song that you wrote?
Not really. It's all a bit of a blur now, you know.
And what are your main memories of making the debut?
Mild panic, and then I just wanted to, we wanted to make it as noisy and as hectic as possible, really. I remember there being like there'd been a couple of songs we'd done that were kind of slightly more poppy and to our ears. So I remember being like, let's just definitely not do that. Let's make something that's really brutal, which it probably isn't. But you know,
it's hard to do that, isn't it? Like a debut album. A lot of debut albums often suffer because they're trying to be a reflection of their live show and it never capture it, but you sort of nailed it.
I think so. I always thought it was quite hard to just do records quickly, and all my favourite records are quickly, and all my favourite records are documents over time. So that definitely is a definite document of that year that we had. And also to make records, you have to try and push yourself as far out as possible, because the reality is once you get the mix, the masters, once they go through the certain bits that they go through, you know, they always end up sounding less kind of a bit more tamer. So you really have to mentally get out as far out there as possible and try and do things in different ways, I suppose, tune it differently, or no click track, or everyone, you know, annoy everybody so everyone's really does a really aggressive take, or you know, and it's all these kind of ones.
Did you enjoy making it?
Yeah, and Steve Mackey of he played in Pulp and stuff. He was great, and we really got on. Still get on now. He's a nice man, so that was great. Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed that.
And then compare that to making the second record, which I read a few interviews with you where you really put yourself through the mill for that.
Well, I suppose it became different. Andy left. I think it was Andy left, and then I suppose when we first started the first record, we still had a free house for a friend and have a squat and stuff in Bethnal Green. So there was still some infrastructure behind us personally, or bands had somewhere to live, had somewhere to make music, had like a little setup at home, some speakers, had little part-time jobs we were holding on to. But once after we toured the hell out of the first one, then all of the infrastructure probably goes down, really. So then it was literally trying to make music in time without any kind of solid foundations or anywhere to live, really. And we didn't have a record deal, I don't think. We didn't have any money, so everything became a bit harder. But a lot of friends helping us out, really, who, you know, it's always musicians helping other musicians, or, managed to make it happen, really.
I read that Jason Pierce from Spiritualized was of guiding force for you during it.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was a good man. I had dinner with him last night, actually. We did a video yesterday.
So that's cool.
He played a gig on Saturday, which was great.
Yeah, the candles thing.
Yeah, it was really good. So I went down to that, and I mentioned that we had a video. So he was reading his book for a few hours while I was poncing around, and we had a little Turkish afterwards. Yeah, he's been a good man, really. And, you know, like a lot of good friends, we've got musicians talking about music and making records and how to make great records that you like and stuff, you know.
Who do you see as kindred spirits?
I mean, I do. I love Spiritualized. They're a great, great, great band, and Jason's songwriting is great. And he helped us produce a couple of songs on this.
And he's West Midlands as well.
Yeah.
He's both got a similar sort of cosmic that can turn raucous vibe. What's in the air in the West Midlands?
I don't know. I'm not too sure. Not too sure, really. Yeah, not for me to say. Haven't been there for a while.
What's the best bit of advice he's given you?
There's been lots of little bits and bobs along the way.
Did making the second record feel like a bit of a Mission Impossible at times? Did you think it wouldn't get done?
No, because I think the more people said they couldn't happen, or the more people were against it, or the more people wanted something from us, or wanted it to be like the first one, or the more I became more headstrong, and we all did basically. And Vinny as well, who's great, who plays bass, he joined us in a chance encounter in Glastonbury. So things, once everything got, once we got back on track, we were pretty quick really and knew exactly what we wanted to do. And it kind of just galvanised me personally, and maybe us three, all going through loads of different kind of stuff at the time, which was quite, some of it quite heavy, some of it quite light. So it just kind of brought us closer together, really, to make kind of a good soulful record.
What did you learn from it in terms of that you'll use to go forward to make a third album?
Not to do it again, probably. Maybe there's easier ways to do it than to crucify yourself and to try and make it easier. Be a song and dance man or something.
When are you happiest?
Most of the time, yeah. On stage is quite good. Playing gigs is quite good. Something they just go past like a blur, so it's kind of like a weird state of mind, really, just being in that headspace. Sleeping's pretty good.
You haven't been sleeping much, though.
Put the washing out today on the line for a friend. That was great. Yeah, there's lots.
Was there a list of jobs, or did you do that off your own back?
Oh, yeah, I did it all from my own mind.
That was your little parting gift before you go off to Hamburg.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
And then after this EP, what next for Yak and for you?
I'm not too sure, really. I'm not too sure. Probably not a lot, I don't reckon. But I said that before and something happened, so I'm not too sure. I think Elliot's going to go live in Australia, I think, or New Zealand. A little bit.
So that's another Yak member that's going to move to Australia.
Yeah. We were joking that you could go meet Andy and have a jam out there. They just need someone else to just shout.
Is that the effect you have on people, that they literally travel to the other side?
I do think that from the outside could look like that. But yeah, I'm not too sure really. I'm just going to have some time to ourselves really. I think it's going to be toured quite a lot, and I want to try and do some furniture again and get. I might buy a van and go travelling. Yeah. So.
What do you like about doing the furniture thing?
Finding the beauty and worth in something that seems worthless, I suppose. Yeah. Same as the music. As it's a similar kind of thing. If you dress a room in a certain way, it can make you feel completely different than you did before you walked in a room. And I think good music can make you, you know, walk differently down the street or make you dream, I suppose. So maybe there's something in that.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Ollie from Yak, and you're listening to Q Presents The Making Of.
Did you ever read Smash Hits magazine?
No, I didn't, no.
Smash Hits used to have a thing called the Biscuit Tin.
Right.
That had a collection of random questions in it.
Okay.
That we have reignited for our podcast.
Oh, great.
We haven't got a biscuit tin, but we've got a Jiffy envelope.
Okay.
So I'm going to give it a little shake, and then you pick out a question and answer it.
Okay, yeah. What's your favourite restaurant? And that's a nice question. Well, the one I went to last night was quite good, and that was Mangel 2 in Dalston, Turkish restaurant. It's wonderful there. It's amazing. Gilbert and George always arrive at the same time, 8 o'clock on the dot. Well, every time I've been there, so that's a good restaurant.
What did you order?
Some kebab of some sort. I'm not a huge foodie, to be honest with you, so it's probably wasted on me. But that's a good restaurant.
Next one. What did Jason order?
The same, I think. Kebab of some sort. Who would play you in a film of your life? It'd have to be living or dead.
Living, I guess. I don't know if that technology exists.
I'm so bad at films, you know. I've got the attention span of a gnat, so.
You don't have to watch it, you just have to cast them.
Kenneth Williams? I don't know. I was just watching Kenneth Williams today in a. I'm addicted to watching old Parkinson's and old talk shows where people just talk. And there's one with him and a union boss, which is great. There we go. Do you have any hidden talents outside of music? I can drive.
I hope you can, seeing you've been living out of a car.
I can drive. Well, do I have any hidden talents? I suppose I don't want to be big-headed, but... I like my furniture. I like doing that, like I said before.
Do you feel good at it? Because you must be good at it, but do you feel... You know that thing that you get from when if you write a great song?
Yeah.
You must think, oh, this is a great song. Do you get the same feeling from doing
quite
the furniture?
Fleeting moments. It's like I was saying, speaking to a friend yesterday, he goes, do you like LA? I was like, well, I went there for like a few days and then I just started really loving it, you know, putting sunglasses on and walking down the street thinking, oh, shit hot for a hot minute before having to rein myself in and say, what are you playing at? So.
Next one, we'll do a few more.
What's your favourite word? What's my favourite word? Well, the one I've probably used most regularly, I don't know, it's probably not my favourite one. Seminal. We were joking about rockumentaries the other day and how everything's become seminal.
Yeah, I try and avoid that one.
Yeah, and there's quite a lot. I watch a hell of a lot of rockumentaries.
So do you?
It's obscene.
You should make a yak one.
Yeah, well, I think that there had been one. A good friend of mine kept sending me a message who'd followed us from our first gig at the Shackwell when we did, where he filmed it, and then it somehow got to Fat Possum Records in America, who put our first single out, really. No one in the UK, I think they were too close to it because they could smell us and didn't like us. So from a distance, we looked probably better than we were. So, and he contacted me the other day, because he followed us around for a little while, and I was a bit nervous about watching it. It would be us being really like highfaluting and talking about how we're going to take over the world. But it was actually quite sweet, really. We all had about 7 haircuts at once and stuff. It was quite amusing seeing how deluded we were. And it was about local venues around East London, I suppose. And there was like Fat White Family were in it, and King Gizzard, and a few other bands that were around that time. So it was quite nice, really. And it ends up with us playing at Scala, which was one of our most seminal gigs.
What's your favourite rockumentary?
I don't like Metallica particularly, but that one's quite funny. I like them all. There was that Bros one that's hilarious. I think it's just something like, it's like good comedy, isn't it? The tragedy of someone sending themselves up and the humiliation of sometimes being involved in music.
And also it's always interesting, the aftermath, whether or not they're going to embrace it. The fact that Metallica put that out.
Yeah. I got in a little, what should I say now? I got in a little bit of trouble with the Metallica manager lately.
Really?
He's the gentleman. He was only joshing, but I ended up in some kind of situation. But it was quite amusing because he walks in, I was like, that's the guy from the Metallica. You know, when they say, what are you going to call the album? They go, some kind of monster. He's like, that is a great name. Whatever. But there's like, I'd watch one on the steps or, what was the one? All sorts of nonsense. Sorry, rambling on.
No, you're not. Okay, last one.
And then to Cologne. Are you a good dancer? Or dancer, as you'd say here. Probably not, no. I could do a little bit of twirly, twirly, twirly.
Well, if you're going to trash a lot when you first moved here, were you getting on the dance floor then?
Yeah, probably was. I went to Ibiza the other weekend, and that was amazing, just going to nightclubs at 2 in the morning, leaving at 8 in the morning, and just really, it was tops off job. And just listening like, wow, shit, where's the bass gone? Here it's back again. This is great. And was loads of some friends that are really into that kind of stuff and listening. So, and that was great.
So all those house records that your sister left you?
Yeah, and they were all there. It's great now. I did like going to, I've never been to Ibiza. It was great. Just to dance for a whole week, and then ended up going into the Alps, and we played a gig in the basically a cloud in the hot amps at the Stoner Rock gig.
That's cool.
One night I left the nightclub at 5 a.m, got on a plane at 7 a.m, got to London, got on another plane to get to Geneva, to then travel through Geneva late to get to the Alps, to then watch this like Stoner Rock from, I was kind of like, wow, contrast again, you know.
We should have had the camera crew with you. That'd be great stuff for the rockumentary.
Yeah, I wasn't very chatty in transit, but yeah.
Okay, Ollie, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, yeah.
Have a safe journey to Cologne. Thank you to producer Sue. And to you, the listener, for tuning in, please remember to rate us and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcast fix. This has been Q Presents The Making Of with Ollie Burslem from Yak. Thank you for listening. Thanks for coming in and doing that, man.
Thanks. Yeah, cheers.
Jason's such a sweet guy. I met him for the first time, I interviewed him last year. And then I've had this a few times. I had the same thing with Bobby Gillespie a few months before. I'd seen Jason Pierce once, maybe he's always, you know, in the Golden Eagle having a pint or something.
Yeah.
But as soon as I interviewed him, I was seeing him like every few days. Yeah. I kept bumping into him. And it was the sweetest Jason Pierce thing where I'd been playing football in Shoreditch and I came around the corner and he was coming out of Sainsbury's local. And I was like, Jason! He's like, oh, hi. I was like, I've got to run and get the train. And as I said, I've got to run and get the train, he said, do you live around here too? So I went, I've got to run and get the train. And I walked on. And as I walked off, I could hear him saying to himself, oh, you don't live around here then. It's just like, oh, man, I'm so sorry. You're such a sweet guy.
Oh, we had a good weekend together. Yeah, because I rocked a bit of his gig and did loads of magic mushrooms. So I went on my own as well. So he was finding me quite amusing because I was just like, with all the candles. But we had a good drink last night. It was nice.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I saw some friends at that show. It was really amazing.
Yeah, it was really a beautiful, beautiful concert. Right, I'm going to go get loads of duvets and cushions and make a little bed in the van.
So how long drive is
so
that?
Cute.
I think it's like 7 hours and then 6 hours. And I think they're all about 7-8 hours for about 5 days now. And I'm a really nervous passenger, so I'm just always like... But it'll be fine.
Is that being in control?
Yeah.
Oh, I can get a hug. Thank you.
Thanks for having
really
me.
Really lovely to meet you.
Yeah, thank you.
Have nice a wonderful journey.
Hi, I'm Ollie from Yak, and you've been listening to Q Presents The Making Of.